Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me on this summer of 2020 that has been, well, I hope that your 2020 has been going as good as it possibly can. It's been a bit of a wacky year, and hopefully things will start to turn around for us. But anyways, for the next 30, 40 minutes, let's see if we can maybe learn something and hear from somebody quite interesting who I think you're going to dig. My guest today is a growth engineer. He's an investor, an advisor, an author, and a serial entrepreneur who has had 7 successful exits. He's currently serving as the CEO of Growflow, which is an industry-leading venture-backed suite of software products for companies in the cannabis industry. Although he's been building, scaling, and successfully exiting businesses for the past 12 years, he actually started his career in 2008 as a professional online poker player. He is also the author of Viral Hero, a book that he uses to dispel the myths of viral marketing, but he also provides you with a proven playbook for creating explosive growth through marketing. Now, let's hack. Travis Steffen. During the next 30 minutes or so, you're going to hear Travis and I discuss dealing with competitors, analyzing them, keeping your eye on them, and also how to go about dealing with that and also your product and business at the same time. And maybe you don't have a 60-person team and a person, as Travis will tell you, that's solely dedicated to competitive analysis. But luckily, you don't need to, because there's tools like Ahrefs. Ahrefs makes competitive analysis easy, simple even. Their tools show you how your competitors are getting traffic from Google and why. You can see the pages and content that send your competitors the most search traffic, find out the exact keywords they're ranking for, and which backlinks are helping them rank. Then, from there, you can just replicate it or improve on their strategies altogether. It does not matter what market you are in. You have to be paying attention and analyzing your competition. And you should use my favorite tool, which is Ahrefs. Do you want to learn more? Simply check out their blog or YouTube channel for step-by-step SEO tutorials. They have a 7-day trial for only $7. Head over to ahrefs.com to sign up. That's ahrefs.com. Sign up, get your 7-day trial, or head over to the blog and just see what they could teach you. And we're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest, Travis. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Absolutely. My pleasure. I've been looking forward to this. So let's jump into the first big question. Travis, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I would say it's quantifying risk to my own comfort level. Before becoming an entrepreneur, I was a professional online poker player. I was also a professional mixed martial artist and Muay Thai fighter. And both of those professions kind of desensitize you to certain amounts of risk in various ways. Without having had those experiences and going through the swings and the fear that come with those, I would not be the entrepreneur that I am today. I wouldn't feel nearly as comfortable taking very large financial risks myself or going into any potentially scary, intimidating room with confidence. So those, I think just risk in general and managing it and feeling comfortable and confident in taking big risks has been my biggest asset.
Are you only like confident and like comfortable with this risk, or does it also kind of drive you?
That's a great question. Honestly, I'm not 100% sure if it drives me or not. I definitely have had a few roles that feel a little bit more safe and stable. For example, right now, I'm CEO of a company called Growflow, and we just raised, you know, $8.5 million in April. There's not as much risk from a, you know, will we or won't we succeed perspective today. We've got 60 plus employees and 5 million in annual recurring revenue, things like that. But in terms of just thinking about the things that we can do and the bets that we can make on ourselves to hit that certain level of scale that's actually exciting for me and for our team, is it's something that I wouldn't be able to live without. That's for sure. I would never be content just having a good little business per se. That's great for a lot of people who just want to pay their bills and live comfortably and have a lifestyle business. That's awesome. I wish that I was one of those people. Life would be a lot easier. I definitely think much, much, much bigger. And if I find at any course, at any moment during a journey in a venture, that I'm seeing evidence that it won't be able to reach that certain level of scale that I have in mind, I'm looking to sell it ASAP and start something that will.
And I mean, a lot of people, Travis, like where you're at with a startup, a lot of people would consider that risky. Like you're not working for IBM at this point. And just like, okay, this is how it's going to be for the next 30 years.
Right.
That's what, and I mean, obviously coming from poker and fighting, I mean, it's obviously there's some sort of like adrenaline there. The sort of the unknown, and as you say, mitigating that risk day to day, you can train for a lot of stuff, but it's still, you have to deal with everything that comes at you at the moment.
Yeah, it's honestly the best comparison I can make that might be relatable in popular culture. There's a film called The Martian that came out a few years ago with Matt Damon. He's stranded on Mars and there's his crew is trying to save him and all these things are happening. And when his crew, the astronauts, are just in space, cut off from their central command center on Earth on purpose, something happens on the ship that is dangerous. And the commander of the ship at the time is just like, all right, stop panicking, just relax and work the problem. And that's a skill that I feel like I've developed definitely over the course of several years, seeing problems of every single kind pop up every single day. There's a solution to everything. There is a course of action that you can take to help stop the bleeding or like ensure that it never happens again or turn it into a positive in some way. And just by staying calm and working the problem and just using your collective intelligence as a team to come up with solutions sounds simple. And it is simple, like in theory, to do something like that, but it's not easy. So it is a honed skill for sure.
Right. It's simple, but it's not easy. I like that. So at this point, with Growflow, you have 60 employees on the team. You just got funding. You've been with Growflow for about a year and a half, I believe. How did you end up as the CEO?
I was an advisor to the original CEO and the founder, Rufus Casey. He and his co-founder, Tom Wilson, went through an accelerator that I was a guest mentor at. And they basically, the two of them, just did everything that I had said in the presentation that I gave. They got into contact and let me know, here's what we did, exactly what you said. This is what happened. What can we do next? I just started working with them as an advisor. We got on a call every week for about 2.5 years as I was building other companies. And there came a point in the company's growth where, and it was both of their first tech company. So they were both kind of jumping off the cliff and growing their wings on the way down, so to speak. But they realized that the company was growing faster than they were individually. And they realized that in order to make the best possible decision for their own stakes in the company financially, they needed to bring on a more experienced leadership team. And thankfully, I had already been working with a number of really smart executives and entrepreneurs myself for a number of years. And very grateful that they trusted me enough to come along with me on this journey. So not only did I come on as CEO, but I also brought four other high level folks with me to help lead the team to the next level. And that was about a year and a half ago now.
Wow. That's cool. Is this your first software?
No, definitely not. I've been starting and selling tech companies in Silicon Valley for the last 12 years. In that time, I've been fortunate enough to have 7 successful exits of companies that I founded or co-founded. A number of others that I've been a part of that I haven't founded or co-founded that I've helped scale or I've helped raise money or one of those things, and have worked with a number of others. I'm a venture partner in a couple of different funds and you name it. So I've been very active for a number of years.
In short, or as they say, you do definitely have the skills to pay the bills. What did you see in GrowFlow that made you decide that this was what you wanted to spend your time on right now?
2 things stuck out. First and foremost, the company, the organization, like the team, they were very raw. There was no business fundamentals. I mean, just none of it was set up at all. It was like there was no coherent communication or cadence, no core values, no goals, no analytics, basically nothing in terms of being an actual business was present. The other thing that I saw was that people were like, customers were flocking to the product because of how well it solved the problem that they had set out to solve, which was effectively what my talk that I gave at that accelerator was all about. It was all about customer-driven product development and a customer-driven architecture. So you could really click with, and I mean, the traditional term is product market fit. They had a really, really strong fit with the market in terms of what they had built. And their success was born purely out of their own knowledge of the industry and what they had done to solve the problem. So those 2 things when combined, knowing that product market fit is one of the hardest things to reach in a startup, and I knew that I could get the organization in tip-top shape with my eyes closed, it felt like a really unique opportunity in an industry. It's the cannabis industry that is very nascent. The competition at the time was very soft. And it was like investors were just beginning to take it seriously. So it felt like very unique timing and a really cool opportunity because it was one of the first cases in which I saw 2 co-founders want to move aside for new leadership. They weren't being abandoning ship. They weren't wanting to go do something else. They weren't being ordered to do so by a board of directors. It was a decision that they made and they wanted to continue to build the product and be a part of the company. And they still are today and they're awesome. So it's just a very unique situation because typically I wouldn't come on as CEO. I see myself more as a founder and CEO. For sure, I've always played that role for the most part, with a few exceptions. And this was one of the first moments where I was like, all right, no, this is actually what I want to do next.
Is it hard to be the CEO, like with 2 the founders?
No, they kind of knew early on. And even as an advisor, you could tell that they were really open to receiving coaching and feedback and direction. So with that dynamic already built, and it being a choice that they both made, I let them know, hey, look, if I'm going to do this, this is what it looks like. And so they had a chance to manage their own expectations. So it was never a struggle. It still isn't today. They're both great. They were serving as CEO and CTO respectively, and neither one of them are in those seats anymore. And I think that they're a lot happier today because of it.
But they're still part of the team.
They are. Yeah. Awesome. They're critical parts of the team.
Awesome. Okay, so at the beginning, I asked you that one thing that you're good at. You said that mitigating, managing risk, and this, like, I guess it seems like this calm ability to deal with and solve problems. What's something that you see within work or business, Travis, that you just feel that you are not good at?
Wow. Good question. So many things.
Where do we start?
Yeah. Honestly, the ability to just focus on in like a very specific lane has not ever been easy for me. I definitely like to place as much of my time on the largest problem that we're facing always, because everything else feels less significant. I know that I'm an outlier in this way because a lot of people really love to be the best in the world at what they do. And they like to do their job and they like to trust that the people around them can do theirs. And that's, I think, really where the magic happens, is I've had to focus really hard on three specific things and only doing these specific things. One, vision and strategy. That's number one. Two, recruiting, hiring, and retention. Basically ensuring the right people come in the door to work for the company. They're in the right seats on the bus, to quote Jim Collins. And then three, confirming there's cash in the bank. And those three things have been kind of where I've committed to remaining. But that first one, the vision and strategy, allows me to participate in the problem solving for most of our departments. I do think that a weakness of mine is patience, for sure, and not wanting to just jump in and break everything and rebuild it all that day. Taking time, doing it right, ensuring everything's bug-free, especially now we're just a little bit more high profile than we once were as a company. And I mean, we've got 1,100 business customers across 10 states. So the things that we do impact a lot of people. I mean, we probably have like 10,000 at least people in those businesses using our products, probably twice that many, to be honest with you. So the things that we do now, unlike early on in a startup where you can quote unquote move fast and break things, we have to be a lot more careful, and we can only break things for a small amount of people. So another weakness of mine definitely is limiting exposure to the risk that I would like to take to a specific subset of users who kind of raise their hand to take that knowingly.
Right. Right. And I mean, you're dealing with businesses. These are people's like livelihoods. And so you can't just break things on them because they run their businesses off of growth flow, do they not?
Absolutely.
Right. So you focus on these three things, but patience is your shortfall that you've come to terms with, which is totally great. You've mentioned several times throughout this, Travis, like that you're an advisor to other people. You've helped other startups. You've worked within others. Do you also like utilize coaches or consultants or advisors?
Definitely. Yeah, it's a core part of my own education. I only recently allowed myself to kind of become a quote-unquote teacher again and start doing things like this, podcasts or press interviews or things like that. There, I realized for a little while I was getting a little bit, I was doing them for the wrong reasons. I was getting some sort of external validation of sorts in being an authority. And I realized that it was really hindering my own growth as an entrepreneur and as a CEO. So what I elected to do for probably about 5 years at least was to just stop being the teacher and go back to being the student. And only recently have I found the bandwidth to do both again, because I haven't wanted to give up being the student at all. So I'm always taking courses. I'm probably average at least 2 books finished every week, notes taken, highlighted, so forth. A good chunk of each morning and each evening are devoted to learning. We actually have a small roster of executive coaches that our C-level team has access to. And we try to provide as many educational opportunities as possible. I actually also applied for and got into a PhD program this year in executive business that I actually elected not to move forward with because of COVID, because they were insisting upon in-person on-campus involvement. And it was halfway across the country and I didn't want to apply all the time. So, but yeah, I'm always trying to pursue the next thing in terms of how to invest in myself and grow as an entrepreneur.
I mean, congrats for being accepted to that and being able to turn it down. What pushed you? So with the experiences you have, with the advisors, with the people around you that you have access to right now, what pushed you to want to go to school and like get your PhD?
I don't have any official business education whatsoever. My master's degree is in exercise physiology and biomechanics. Like, it has absolutely nothing to do with what I do and hasn't for many years. And that one of my first companies was a health and fitness startup, which when I sold it, I was non-competed for 3 years in that industry and just was forced to go do other things in entrepreneurship and just learned with every passing venture. I mean, I think my first exit was like $10,000 or something like that. It was not much. It was just stopping the bleeding and maybe coming back to break even, but it wasn't like anything to write home about. Everyone after that, I basically said, all right, my true goal with this is to learn more so that the next one can be bigger and the next one can be bigger and so on and so forth. And that wasn't always perfectly linear, but by and large, the pattern has been learning as much as possible every single day from books, resources, people, mentors, colleagues, coworkers, and team members who are might be a fellow C-level team member. It might be somebody who we just hire that's like a junior customer support agent. I want to learn from every single one of them because they all have stories to tell. They all have lessons that they're great at what they do in some way. Otherwise, we wouldn't want to hire them. But I never received or pursued an official or structured business education of any kind. So I'm just, there is that quadrant three. I know what I don't know, and it's that way of doing things. I also know that when I talk to somebody who's gone through that traditional path, inevitably we have a tremendous amount that we're able to learn from each other because the ways that I do things and the ways that I've learned to do things are not what they teach in school. And they're fascinated by that because they've learned what they've learned, but I haven't learned any of the things that they know. So I'm very greedy in my quest for knowledge, I suppose.
It seems so. And somebody who, like, to tie back to the beginning again, is like, you love being able to deal with the stress and risk in a very confident, cool, calm way. Do you feel that having a PhD and having to deal with other people who have business educations, would that just give you another level of confidence to deal with them?
Probably. I was also thinking, probably more so, thinking about it being a little easier to raise money with those credentials, it being easier to sell books with those credentials. It's just an instant form of social proof when someone reads your name that I just don't have today. I don't have those letters after my name unless I were to write some sort of book on fitness or something like that, in which case I do have all the right letters after my name, but I'm just not in that field anymore and don't really have the desire to get back into it just based on what I've seen. So yeah, I mean, I honestly, there are a variety of reasons why it could be advantageous. The issue is it can take sometimes 5 years and it's a big commitment of time and effort and attention. So we'll see. I was also given the advice by a mentor of mine that, hey, you know, it turns out what you'd be studying in these courses in your PhD program would be, you'd be studying people like you. So what is the point? So,
exactly. I mean, yeah. I think that's what a lot of people listening are like, I think you have the experience of them. You should probably be teaching the course, not yeah. taking it. But I mean, it's a personal decision to do. And obviously sure. You would learn a ton.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you seem kind of really into learning. So it makes sense. Let's sort of move this into projects. So projects is a loose term, Travis, but projects within the company and either how you deal with just like other people, like other C-level people, or the company as a whole. You're growing fast. You're trying to focus on your three things and you struggle with just that focus and staying on it. And obviously this idea of not being able to just do things and break them and then fix them. How are you guys right now and yourself personally, like structuring the team to stay where you're not breaking stuff and you're like really steadily moving forward, but also you have to move forward fast because it is tech and you don't want to get like outrun by your competition.
Can you rephrase the question? Sorry.
Like how are you? So just think of projects. So whether that's like a product, like part of the product, or it's a marketing project, whatever you want it to be. But how are you guys like trying to deal with this idea of like steadying out, but at the same time growing fast and staying ahead of the competition?
Yeah, good question. Honestly, it becomes more difficult as we scale. It's something that we've talked about recently because we have seen a few upstart competitors that are able to move very, very quickly because they're doing a small fraction of what we're doing today in only one of the markets that we're active in. But by taking that approach and by moving upwards from basically the bottom of the barrel client-wise and then just moving upstream really quickly, they've run into us on a few deals and we've lost a deal to them now. Like things like that have happened. So it's something that's clear and present in most of our strategic discussions. And honestly, a way that we're handling it is trying to amplify our strengths. Just saying, all right, we've got our goals, we've got our North Star metric, we've got the ways that we make decisions from a cultural standpoint, that we have like a lot of strengths in terms of our hiring and the quality of what we do in our customer service. So we're just going to, rather than being reactive in just saying, oh, well, they have this feature and we need it because they have it. And it's clearly like it's helpful from a marketing perspective. We found that to be a poor strategy for us. It can work really well for some companies to be more of like a copycat. I mean, Microsoft is a perfect example of that. I mean, they're one of the biggest companies, more successful companies of all time, and they've basically exclusively taken that approach. For us, we've found that the path forward for us to develop the right thing for the customer is just keeping them as involved as possible in the process. So just regularly and relentlessly surveying and talking to customers as quickly as possible, and then just maintaining sound fundamentals every day. And measurements, we do daily huddles and we do data reviews and retrospectives and strategy meetings and all the just the sound normal cadence of business, and just sticking to that and believing that the process will work. And it really has.
So for the most part, you can, because you like seem, I don't know the market totally, but you seem like a market leader, if not the, that you can somewhat just ignore your competition and focus on your customers.
Yeah, we always try to keep tabs on them. And we do try to use some of the things that they do that like maybe our customers haven't spoken about as inspiration to try to figure out, okay, why would they have done this? Is there any reason that we should do the same right now? Is, you know, and in some cases, is this even legal for them to do? And do we want to take a risk like that as well? So we do keep tabs on them, and we do try to think about why they might be doing some of the things that we do that they're doing, so we can predict what they're about to do next. But for the most part, we try to let the customers drive our product roadmap as much as possible. I know for a lot of people, they'll be very reactive to competitors on two specific things. One of them is feature development and one of them is pricing. In both cases, it's usually the wrong way. And 99% of the time, if not 100% of the time, involving customers, conversations with customers and surveys with customers will lead you to the promised land. And it's almost foolproof if you do it that way, because at the end of the day, your business succeeds when your customer agrees with the value that you're providing them for the price you want to provide for them at. And they don't necessarily care as much about what your competitor has, as long as what you do and how you do it clicks with them. There's, for the most part, room in every market for a couple players. And if they carve out a specific target within that market, then you can shift and carve out a different target within that market and be very successful. And so that's what we try to focus on.
How are you acquiring customers at this point?
We do a lot of direct sales right now. We have a sales team that does a lot of cold calling and prospecting and just taking people manually through process training and just their own ability to sell. You know, that's a big one. We do use some basic digital ads. We do a lot of press. And when COVID isn't in full swing, we do have a presence at events, industry events, and so forth. But for the most part, we're very fortunate to be in a market in which all of the customers that we could possibly have are, it's basically publicly available information. We don't have to do demand generation. We don't have to convince customers why they need us. We do certain things that they know they have to have in order to be in business at all. We do, for example, government compliance. You know, these are customers that are, you know, either producing or selling controlled substances legal way. So they have to have what we offer or what one of our competitors offer. They know it if they've done even 5 minutes of research on how to start a cannabis business. The biggest thing that we do though is we blend those compliance activities with a lot of business critical tasks that actually allow them to operate a business in a profitable way. Sales tools, analytics, point of sale software, inventory management, things like that, that they absolutely have to do anyway. And then we blend them with the tasks that keep them legal and in business with the compliance and seed to sale tracking. So to put it bluntly, like every single action that they take as a business owner in cannabis, like I'm not exaggerating, every single action they take, even if it's as granular as like moving a plant to a different shelf in the same room, all of it has to be reported to the state in near real time. They just basically have to know everything that you're doing. Every product that you have on a shelf is tagged with, you know, an RFID tag. Like anytime a plant's status changes, or if it's flowering, or if it's you're harvesting it, or you're moving it to a different room, or anything like that, any change of custody, all of it has to be reported. So we're a very unique type of business, but at the end of the day, we are still B2B SaaS, and 95% of B2B SaaS like fundamentals do still apply.
Right. And from a product level, you guys really have to also keep up on like the laws and the way the rules work within these markets and per state, I'm sure.
Of course. Yeah. We have a full-time compliance officer that keeps tabs on all of that in real time and communicates them to our team. So our team knows how to best service the customers better. And anytime a customer has a compliance question that they ask our, you know, customer happiness team or our customer success team, those questions get filtered up to our compliance officer, who's an attorney, and he always has the answers. So yeah, it's definitely something we've had to invest in.
Awesome. Well, I've had an absolute blast, Travis. I would like to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
It's this idea I've been working with. I interviewed like over 500 people at this point, and I'm working with this idea that I think is like the entrepreneurial sort of gap. Us as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we seem to always be pushing our successes, personal and business-wise, into the future so that no matter what we actually accomplish, to ourselves, it's always when you get like, and you hit that next metric or you stand on that next stage, that's when you'll be successful, you think. But of course, we both know that seconds before that happens, you're just going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future. That is needed. We know that. But I would like it, rather than looking forward right now, Travis, if you could stop and turn around and look behind you. You've been at this, I think, for 12 or 13 years, you said. You've had some big successes and I'm sure some failures that you haven't even told us about at this point. But how do you feel looking at this entire journey up until today?
Well, I would say most high performers have somewhere in their mind an opinion that they thought they were going to be further than they are today. But that's a trap. And it's one that I battled with for like several years, just not being satisfied, you know, with where I was because of some form of validation as a man, as a human being, as an entrepreneur. I was comparing myself in my day-to-day to the highlight reels of other people who I looked up to or some of my peers. And it's just an unhealthy and just not a good outlook, not a good way to live. Thankfully, just through continuing education and continuing to develop myself, I was able to find like, hey, look, you are not your money in the bank. You are not the public successes you've had or your press mentions, or, you know, for a lot of other people in society, your followers on Instagram or whatever it is you're on social media, or your, the likes that you get in your latest post, you, that's not you. It's as a result of some things that you're choosing to do, but it's not who you are and it's not what determines your self-worth. So, you know, looking back, I would definitely remind myself that hey, you are enough. You are capable of all these things, regardless of what you've done so far. Everyone pays tuition, so to speak. So the mistakes are there to teach you lessons. Don't be upset about the mistakes. Just learn and move forward and see the larger financial mistakes as investments in yourself and in your education. And, yeah, I mean, that's the main thing. Also it's never too late. You know, some people will look at people like Zuckerberg and he was a billionaire at 20, whatever, like 21 or something like that. And be like, oh my God, I'm 32. What am I going to do? Like, I can't do that now. Well, Warren Buffett wasn't a billionaire until his 50s. And there are a number of very successful people who did not crack the code until they're older than you are today. So I would just say, like, for myself, don't measure yourself by dollars in the bank. Don't measure yourself by public successes. Measure yourself by the energy you get out of bed with every morning to learn, become better, to follow through on the commitments that you're making to yourself and the people around you. If you've ever had like a near-death experience, you find that a lot of that stuff gets shaken out of your head in an instant. You know, I've had a few of them. So thankfully, those have been very helpful on my own journey to just put everything in perspective.
It's just perspective. It's, that's what it really takes. Yeah. But very, very, very well said, Travis. I really, truly appreciate it. Could you, because we've talked about Grow Flow sort of throughout the conversation, but could you now specifically just tell the listener what Grow Flow, what you guys do and who you do it for?
Yeah. Grow Flow is a B2B SaaS, software as a service company serving businesses. We focus on compliance, inventory management, point of sale, analytics, and sales tools for cannabis companies in the US.
Awesome. So US only at this point?
At this point, yes.
Yes. Awesome. All right. So getgrowflow.com is the site. You've also written a book last year called Viral Hero, which can be tracked down at viralhero.com. And Travis is on several social medias that we will track down and drop into the show notes for you. So you can track down Travis and follow up with any questions or just see what he's up to there. Travis, once again, thanks so much for stopping by. I truly, truly appreciate it. Thanks for sharing so openly and just keep doing what you're doing because it is inspiring to watch.
Much appreciated. And definitely you can get Viral Hero wherever books are sold. So feel free to take, if you're interested in building products that grow themselves and architecting virality into the bones of your company, it is, I promise you that it's unlike anything you've read before in viral marketing. It's not the same social media kind of game. It's a lot deeper than that. And it's very tactical and hands-on and step-by-step. If you get it and read it and disagree, I will refund 100% of your money.
Whoa, nice. So viralhero.com or anywhere that you buy books online. And grab it.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. And I hope you enjoyed that as much as I have. The book, Viral Hero. I have not had a chance to read it yet because we just finished the interview, but I'm looking forward to it. And I'm actually going to use it because we just launched from Hack the Entrepreneur ourselves. We launched a new business ourselves called Rank Reset, which helps online course creators with SEO and content strategy. And we help them to be able to scale their businesses and sell more courses and help more students. And so as of launching that, I think that a book like Viral Hero and the advice of Travis Stephan will probably do me a lot of good. And if nothing else, I'm sure it's going to be worth the hour or two or three or four that it takes to read a book. So I'm looking forward to it. You can grab a copy, Amazon or anywhere you buy books online, and viralhero.com. If you want to check out our business, the new one, go to rankreset.com. And if you're a course creator, maybe it's for you. All right. Well, I hope that summer has been treating you well. It's only been 6 months this year, and it seems like it's been way, way, way longer. But I hope things are good, and I hope that you are doing well. If there's ever anything I can do for you, you can track me down at hacktheentrepreneur.com, or you can email me, my name at hacktheentrepreneur. All right, it's been an absolute blast. I appreciate you stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.